If you've been listening to the podcast recently, chances are you've noticed that we've had a lot of back-to-school information. The reason being, it's back-to-school time. And on today's show, I thought it would be especially interesting to bring on a school nurse to really go over all that school nurses really do. We'll niche down into food allergy, but we also start at more of a 40,000 foot view of why school nurses are so critical to allowing all children to have safe education experiences. So on the episode today is one of my favorite school nurses, Tracy White. She is the specialist with the Office of Student Services in the Virginia Department of Education. She is one of the leaders in school nursing in this country, and I am so excited to have her on the show and really just dive in to all the amazingness that school nurses bring to our schools, bring to our children. So here's the intro and then my interview with Tracy White.
Welcome to Food Allergy and Your Kiddo with Dr. Alice Hoyt, the podcast about demystifying food allergies, diminishing allergy anxiety, and taking back control. Let's navigate this challenge together with evidence-based information, scientific research, and tried and proven practices. And now, here's your host, board-certified allergist and immunologist specializing in food allergy, Dr. Alice Hoyt.
Tracy, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
So we'll dive right in. Can you share with our listeners sort of how did your journey with school nursing begin?
Well, it began quite by accident. I was a critical care nurse in a busy teaching hospital and newly married. And my husband was transferred numerous times in a very short time frame. And so it brought me to different parts of the state of Virginia and North Carolina and away from these larger medical centers. And I began to gravitate more toward the community health setting. I actually volunteered in my children's school, which is right down the street, and because they did not have a full-time school nurse. And that's when that it was long before FERPA came along. But yeah, just they were anxious to have people, nursing staff, that were available to help manage kids in the school setting. So I did that one or two days a week.
Wow. And
yeah.
About how long ago would you say that was?
I began in 1993. So I've been in school health for a long time now. Been a nurse for 44 years, and doesn't seem possible, but seen a lot of changes, and never would have believed that I would be working with a pediatric population in a community-based setting. I surprised myself.
Because you were critical care before, so you're kind of the opposite of what you thought you would be doing.
Yeah. I was pretty, I can remember, I worked at VCU in Richmond and was able to scrub and all those, you know, they're really concrete kinds of functions, and was on a flight crew as well. And so it did a complete 180. And I think especially having children, that changed what I thought about how to care for kids and where my kids were going and what kind of care were they going to be receiving. And so that had an impact on me too. But I will tell you that if my nursing instructors could see me now, they're probably all dead, but they would be rolling in the grave, because pediatrics was probably one of my least favorite areas of practice when I was in nursing school.
Wow. I never would have thought that about you. I mean, we've known each other for a few years now, and just your passion for making sure that these kids receive the best possible care at school. Wow. That's so interesting to know that. And yeah. tell our listeners sort of a 40,000 foot view. We'll niche down to food allergy in a little bit, but what school nurses, what does a school nurse, you hear my daughter speaking of having children, what does a school nurse do?
Well, right off the bat, I want to dispel the fact that it's all about just Band-Aids and ice. I get really irritated with that because school nurses just embrace so much more than that. And I think people that assume that are just not aware of what they nurses do on an everyday basis. And I have nurse friends who look at me and say, why did you want to be a school nurse? They think about it as something that you would bring a book to do. You bring a book into the office during the day that is going to be very boring. And they are just stunned and surprised that school nurses are busy doing actually many more skill-based procedures than they themselves often do in a hospital or a clinic setting. And so school nurses have to have a broad understanding of disease, communicable disease. We have to know how to be able to take care of not only the acute care needs, the kids that do get hurt on the playground or gym class, those kinds of things, or that become ill while they're at school, but to address the complex healthcare needs related to chronic illness or children that are medically fragile. And so since I started in nursing, we with the advances of technology and research, the kids that would never have survived early delivery or a NICU, a neonatal intensive care experience after birth are surviving and they're thriving. They may have a developmental disability or something related to preterm or a complex medical issue, but we are the ones, school nurses, working with these children and their families each and every day in the school setting. Now with COVID, that has created additional things to think about, separating kids that are sick and training teachers and assessment skills and all kinds of things like that that we've had to consider as a result of returning to school in those areas where the community transmission, you know, allows us to do so. So we actually have a huge, in the state of Virginia, my good friend Vicki Southall from the University of Virginia is a very, she writes a lot of articles and does a lot of research, and she has created a school-based health procedures manual, which we use, and it's over 700 pages. So it addresses just about every medical need and procedure, what the norm should be and what expected complications are. And so that represents how many things, how many different scenarios we have in a school setting. And some kids may have multiple health-related issues that school nurses have to care for each and every day in the school setting. So again, it's not just boo-boos and ice and sending kids home. It's what I love is the ability to work with our families, work with our teaching staff and school staff to really work and build those relationships with the families within our school community. So the thing about what I like most about school nursing is it combines your skills and your communication and the role of a nurse educator all kind of rolled up in one.
Hi there, this is Alexis from the Hoyt Institute of Food Allergy. Did you know that the Institute is the official sponsor of the Food Allergy and Your Kiddo podcast? And did you also know that you are now able to connect with Dr. Hoyt directly? That's right. we are now offering food allergy office hours for parents. These one-on-one virtual sessions are available for parents all across the country. It's an educational session, not an office visit, where you can ask all of your food allergy questions and finally get answers. It's as comfortable as having a cup of coffee with your bestie. Simply click the link in the show notes to schedule and mention this ad. We are so, so excited to connect with parents across the globe with this new service. Okay, now back to Pam and Dr. Hoyt.
And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that in the United States, all children are entitled to an education, and that includes children who have complex medical conditions. So if it wasn't for school nurses, there would be no way to provide that education to all of these children who, to your point, are now able to live that, you know, 20, 30 years ago wouldn't necessarily survive, but now these kids can, but they do need extra help, especially extra help at school. And it's because of school nurses that those children are able to have an education. And not just those children are able to have an education, but also those parents are able to work some outside of the home. In the case of a woman who maybe was working before she had a child and then felt, you know, once the kiddo was back to school, then felt called to work outside the home, she's able to do that. Or the flip side, the dad's able to do that because there is a school nurse there helping to take care of that child when that child is not with the parent. So, I mean, just school nurses play such a tremendous role. And I think a lot of people maybe don't necessarily recognize that unless they themselves have a child who is in that situation.
Sure. And it's not in Virginia, as with many other states, it is not a mandate for schools to employ school nurses. Not every person that you see in a school health office is a registered nurse. They may have personnel in there, but they may be trained unlicensed people, or an LPN would be serving in that capacity. And sometimes in our more rural settings, it could be the school secretary. You know, some things don't change. That was when I was in school, was go to the school secretary if you were hurt. But, you know, I just want to drive that home that, you know, that we really emphasize the need for a registered nurse to be in schools all day, every day, to really benefit our children and maximize their learning potential. And some other things too that nurses lend to the educational, you know, community. We're the one medical person in an educational setting. And so we really, that communication with our administrators, but we can be very useful in tracking, identifying trends in communicable diseases like COVID, or looking at the absentee rate of kids in school and calling parents up and, you know, what's the deal? What's going on? How can we help? What resources do you need for that as asthmatic who, I mean, I live in a rural area and lots of people heat with wood and, you know, that's terrible for an asthmatic with all the dust and things like that. So, you know, working to get resources for those kids, and families, you know, such as fuel oil delivered or, you know, just, you're kind of like a lot of things rolled up in one. I think if you're a good school nurse, I'm just really biased with that, but I think you're a little bit, you're all nurse, you're part teacher, you're a little bit of a social worker in some cases, a counselor in some cases, and I don't want to, we're not counselors, I just want to clarify that, but we do really address the needs of the whole child because the goal is for all children to achieve success in school, and that's going to look different for every child.
That's exactly right. And Before we started recording, you told me a story about a little girl who had some special medical needs that y'all were able to teach a skill. Could you share that story?
Sure. We have, again, as I mentioned, there are kids, prior to, the 1975, I believe, kids were separated, kids that needed special, that were special education or had special health needs were kind of segregated from the regular, typical school community. But we had a little girl who had just turned six with spina bifida, and her mom.
Can you tell us a little bit more, our listeners, a little bit more about spina bifida and some of the challenges they have?
Yes. This young lady was spina bifida affects, the nerves, and the nerves affect the muscles. And so she had no feeling from the waist down. And she was, she spent her school day in a wheelchair, and she could not, she did not know when her bladder was full or her bowels were full. And so she would wear a brief, and, it's really important how it is when you have to go to the bathroom, how your bladder expands. And so we want to, kind of emulate several times over the course of the school day that she would have to empty her bladder. And so we were able to work with her from kindergarten, and we would initially do straight casts in the school clinic. And she was pretty astute, and mom was a little resistant to teaching her at home how to do this. She just felt like she couldn't do it. And we were able to connect with mom and just, support her and have her support us in our efforts. And that child could self-cath by the time she was 6 years old. She would come to the school clinic, and after a while she was like routine. She just rolled by me, and she would go into the clinic bathroom. She would get her supplies, and she would take care of business and check in with me every day, a couple times a day. And it was a great accomplishment. This is part of the teaching, the health education aspect of school nursing that I love, is helping kids just achieve their potential. And school's not just about learning reading and math. It's, preparing our kids for adulthood and those skills that they're going to need. And I wonder sometimes about that little girl who is now in her 30s, how long it would have taken her to reach that level of skill to be able to self-care for herself. And that in itself, when you rely on people to know that you can do it yourself, is a great personal achievement.
That's such a wonderful story. I mean, it's a practical skill for her, but just the dignity that that little girl was then able to have as she started making that journey of of more so taking care of herself, and at the age of six. Yep. And because of you and school nurses who were able to teach her. And I mean, I love that story because it really highlights, to your point earlier, that it's so much more than ice packs and Band-Aids.
Absolutely. Amen.
So let's niche down to food allergy and talk a little bit more about food allergy and kind of start with, how do you feel the landscape of food allergy? And you can also talk some about food intolerance here. Sure. How has that changed in your career as a nurse?
Well, when I started practicing in the 1990s, there were children or students that had EpiPens there, mainly for peanut allergies. But we had a number, and many schools continue to use, they have an ice cream day. And as my years as a school nurse in an elementary school setting passed, I noticed that more and more kids were coming in to take their enzymes before ingesting their treat, their ice cream treats for the week. And so many parents refer to that as a food allergy. They have a food allergy to milk. And really what that is more of an intolerance, because food allergies and food intolerance can often be, they're two very different things. So the food intolerance tends to be more of a gastrointestinal or digestive issues related to those milk proteins, for example, or soy. Kids have diarrhea or upset stomach, sometimes some nausea in cases, but mainly lower tract digestive issues. And that's what I began seeing that those kids having and coming into the clinic for that. But before we even talk about the landscape of food allergy, let's just look at food in general, how that has changed in the last 30 or more years. It used to be you'd walk in a cafeteria and everything was homemade, from the rolls to the hamburgers. I mean, there was nothing prepackaged. Those cafeteria ladies did a wonderful job and slathering big pieces of cake and cookies and all kinds of things that were most of them made from scratch. Today, we are working with fewer staff in the cafeterias in our buildings. We have more prepackaged food that's available for purchase at the school, everything from, you know, your chicken nuggets to your pizzas and things like that. And plus students that are coming from home with a packed lunch very often have those, you know, Lunchable products and things like that, the little ready-made snack packs and that they bring to school. And a lot that's within those packets are, you know, have some food additives to it. So we went from a time where my greatest concern was about serving size and obesity, which is still a concern, to those kids that are having more sensitivities to what they're eating. And it seemed like as the 90s progressed, the number of kids that would come in at the beginning of the school year with notes from their specialists with EpiPens, that citing stories about a response they had during the summer, has increased dramatically. And so what we've had to do from the school perspective is really increase awareness of food allergies, sensitivities, ensuring that as many people from as many areas of the school are trained in recognizing the signs and symptoms of anaphylaxis. So that just doesn't mean a classroom teacher or a school nurse. That means the cafeteria workers, that means monitors, that means the school bus drivers as well. So the school nurse has had to really expand the training of increasing awareness and how to respond to food allergies. At the time, this is in the 90s again, I'm really thinking old here, but we didn't have stock epinephrine in our school. In fact, we didn't have stock epinephrine in Virginia schools until 2015, and that may be 14. But when we had a really tragic incident in Virginia, in our Virginia schools, and our legislators really lobbied for stock epinephrine for all schools, all public and private schools. So we've seen, and it's because there has been an increased awareness personally, within our communities, and because of public pressure on school safety. So, you know, more kids, more training. We've really had to be on top of those increasing awareness and as well as our nurses, our unlicensed staff as well. So the landscape of food and the response to food allergies has changed pretty dramatically in the last several, immediately for Virginia in the last 5 years with the addition of south epinephrine, but I've been able to see it from a more global aspect evolve into a much better situation now for keeping our kids safe at school.
You bring up so many interesting points from how the landscape of food itself has changed to seeing more kids with food intolerance, like lactose intolerance, mm-hmm. where they need to take that lactase enzyme to help mm-hmm. them break down the milk sugar, and now into more food allergy, meaning they'll eat the food and have an immediate immune response that includes hives, swelling, trouble breathing. My listeners know that they can go to foodallergyandyourkiddo.com. That's the info blog that accompanies this podcast. Or if you're new to listening, then you might not know, but you could go to that, to the podcast or to the website, and you can read about the difference between intolerance and food allergy. And when we get into food allergy, although food intolerance, it's so important to know if you're intolerant of a food, if you have lactose intolerance, you can avoid it, because those symptoms can be tremendously uncomfortable. They can be socially very frustrating. Mm-hmm. But then when we get into food allergy and thinking about, to your point about, you know, the tragic story tragic event that occurred, and the tragic events that we hear where a child accidentally ingests something to which they're allergic and they die. I mean, it's one of the reasons I think we have so much challenge when it comes to food allergy and providing good education is because it's just so mind-boggling that something like that can actually happen. It's horrific. But what's really reassuring, especially to me as an allergist, is that there are people like you, Tracy, who are in leadership positions who are advocating for best practices to keep kids as safe as possible at school. And that brings us into stock epinephrine. Mm-hmm. And what listeners might not know is that stock epinephrine is an epinephrine auto-injector. Epinephrine being the treatment for a severe allergic reaction. So it's an epinephrine auto-injector that a doctor actually prescribes to the school. That way, if somebody has an allergic reaction at school and they don't have their own epinephrine auto-injector, they might be one of the kiddos who has their first allergic reaction at school. So they were never prescribed one because they didn't know they had a food allergy until they had that reaction. That stock epinephrine is there for those situations so that life-threatening reaction can be treated and can be treated promptly. And also to your point, it's the school nurses who are so often the only medical person in the school, if not just one school, and responsible for many schools. And so not only is the school nurse the one who most likely is the one everybody wants to use the epinephrine, but it's the school nurse who is teaching people how to recognize an allergic reaction and how to treat it, which is why I love working with you guys with the CODANA program with the nonprofit, so that we can not just teach students and not just provide you guys with resources, but provide you guys with resources that then you can use to teach others about how to recognize and respond to anaphylaxis.
Absolutely. You know, the fact that you brought up a good point, you know, there are many nurses that have multiple schools and do have to train those people in a school setting. And especially whether we're in COVID or now, I mean, I don't think you can have enough people trained within a school to respond to an emergency period, and that they, in Virginia, we do have legislation that indicates the number of people based on the size of the school that have to be trained in a variety of different capacities to keep our kids safe at school. But I think too, it's the stock epinephrine, well, as school nurses, we tend to know generally the kids that are returning to school that have had, you know, that have had EpiPens or auto injectors or AVQ devices. They bring them to school along with the parent permission, the physician authorization, and we have them. The stock epinephrine that we have is used for those unknown cases. And those are what scare me worse. I mean, it could be used on a visitor. It could be used on a staff member because, you know, anyone can have a life-threatening allergy at any point. So the fact that we know that there's a certain population of kids with this that have medication at schools is comforting. Having an auto injector and a stock epinephrine within our schools helps us to address those unknown conditions that can occur at any time that are life-threatening to anyone within the school. That's what's comforting to me, that we finally have that in place.
Absolutely. And you guys do so much to keep kids safe at school, you as the Virginia school nurses. But I also want to ask you what can parents of children with food allergies do? How can they work with their local school nurse, with their local schools to help create that safe learning environment?
Well, I tell you what, I think the most important thing is for parents to reach out to the school, not only the school nurse, but the teacher, maybe the administrator, loop them in. Communication is huge. And and I think everybody needs to be on the same page. And so providing our schools with that emergency treatment plan of care, and the medications for the start of school, helping your own child recognize those signs and symptoms of anaphylaxis, helping them to read labels so that they can, it empowers them that they can look and really know what they can and can't have to eat. But knowing too that relationship you are building from the school, whatever grade level it is, will follow, will hopefully follow that student until they complete their education in school. So, we as a school have, you know, we're tasked with certain things, but we want to be able to work with our families, our staff, and provide a student-centered care specific for that child so that they can, be academically successful in school. We really don't want our kids to be out of school because of an incident that happened and miss that, not only the educational time, but the social time too with their friends. And as a person that's had overwhelming anaphylaxis, it scares the living daylights out of you when you have that. As an adult, to be able to put your finger on it, I can't imagine young children, being able to identify those things. And I can totally understand why parents can be very uncomfortable and anxious about sending their child to school. So again, that's where the conversation and relationship building needs to be. And I want to also encourage, I had a situation this morning where we had an unusual a case that we hadn't dealt, a particular school division hadn't dealt with. And I said, look, you know, allergists often have nurse educators or people in their office that are willing to work with schools. Bring them in, bring them to the table. With Zoom now, we can have this discussion. Nobody has to leave their home. We can really address some of these concerns. So it's the teacher, it's the physician or healthcare provider, it's the school and the family. We're all focused on that student together, collaboratively working. And I think that's a win-win situation for everybody.
I love it. I love that. A few years ago, we did a program at University of Virginia when I was there that really focused on getting everybody to the table. And now, to your point, with one of the silver linings to COVID is that it's much more normal to have these Zoom meetings, and you are in your house, and you are holding your daughter in your lap, and things are still getting done. And in a way, it's in some cases, it can make things get done with a lot less friction. Because you're able to just, let's have a Zoom meeting with the doctor real quick. Because yes, a lot of doctors they want the school to have the good information. They want the parents to have the good information. But even with all these different technologies we have, sometimes it's just there's some roadblocks there. And so now I'm especially hopeful that by more people doing these, whether it's FaceTime, Zoom, whatever it is, but there's a way to just quickly get on, have a quick conversation with all parties, and make sure that everybody's on the same page for how to best take care of that kiddo and make sure that everybody knows how to recognize symptoms, how to respond during an allergy emergency, and really arguably most importantly, how can we prevent that child from getting in that situation to start with? And I mean, you guys, I've worked with, I would say, the Virginia school nurses probably the most, because that's really where I started the Codana program. And if you listen to one of the earlier podcasts, that was a session that I just had with you guys. I love working with y'all because you're such a passionate group. You just want to take such good care of these kids. And I think that on today's podcast episode, I think you really gave a great picture of what school nurses do. It's kind of like what one parent may see is just the tip of the iceberg, compared to maybe what another parent sees, depending on the medical complexity. But you guys are always trying to give each child the best possible medical care at school so that they can learn. And it's so wonderful to know that there are school nurses who are working so hard to keep our kids safe. You guys are awesome. I love y'all. Thank you. As we close out, is there anything else that you want to share with our audience, to food allergy mamas who are listening, or to any school nurses who may be listening? Anything else that is just on your heart you want to share?
Well, again, I just think that that relationship that exists or doesn't exist between a parent and a school is hugely important. If it doesn't exist, it really behooves parents and schools to work together. I found that in my many years in healthcare that, that relationship is going to be key for your child throughout their school experience. And so we all make mistakes, we all make errors, but if we make errors, but it's not errors in healthcare, but if a child wasn't sent home when a parent feels like they should have been sent home due to a fever or whatever, that those misunderstandings, when you have a good relationship, really do help all the way around. So those keys to communicating, I am really hopeful as our children are returning to school. We've had some schools that have been in session for 3 weeks now, using a hybrid model, and our school nurses are in touch with the kids that are at home, just checking in on them, seeing how they're doing, keeping those relationships up. And I do think that cannot be understated. So build those relationships with your school. I realize not all school nurses, not all administrators, and not all parents are the same and have the same concerns, but please you know, reach out to them and see how you can help them better care for your child in school.
Very well said. Tracy, thank you so much for sharing all of this with our listeners today. Come back to the podcast soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Isn't she amazing? And don't we all just have a much deeper appreciation for school nurses than probably before that interview? Sometimes when we think of school nurses, we are thinking of Band-Aids and ice packs or health forms or vaccine records, but we may not see their interactions with other children who have these medical challenges, who are incredibly complex regarding the medical issues that not only interfere with them receiving an education, but that interfere with them just having as normal as possible of a lifestyle. And so we're blessed to have school nurses in our schools so that all children, regardless of medical conditions, can receive a solid education. So I hope y'all enjoyed this episode. Also, I talked about Code Anna. Go to our show notes. Go to the podcast website, foodallergyandyourkiddo.com, where you can find information about Code Anna, and you can learn how your school can be better equipped for medical emergencies. Okay, y'all, it's still hurricane season. We're dealing with these hurricanes. So, of course, stay safe out there. And remember, I'm an allergist, but I'm not your allergist. So talk with your allergist about all you've learned on today's episode. And of course, God bless you and God bless your family.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Food Allergy and Your Kiddo with food allergist Dr. Alice Hoyt. For more information on navigating the world of food allergy, visit www.foodallergyandyourkiddo.com and follow Dr. Hoyt on Twitter at Dr. Alice Hoyt. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review. Let's take the anxiety and confusion out of food allergy.